Thank you for having me here, and although he's not in the room, I thank Pastor Walt for inviting me. I feel like this, as I was thinking about coming here, it feels kind of like going over to a cousin's house in some ways, because my wife Tanya and I, we've got two girls, they're in college now, but they went through the Pizzazz program, you know, from the littlest, tiniest group all the way up to volunteers. They've been through Vacation Bible School. Pastor John Gentry and I were good friends we're friends when we both did youth ministry at our churches. So I've never actually been to a Sunday service, but feel like I said, it's kind of like going over to your cousin's house in some way. So the curse of the Blitz. Have any of you ever experienced it, or have you even heard of it? For those of you who might be unfamiliar with it, the curse of the Blitz is from an episode of the sitcom How I Met Your Mother. Basically, it's a curse on those who are foolish enough to leave the party early. They leave the room and miss out on something truly amazing. In this particular episode, which takes place around Thanksgiving time, various characters experience the curse and miss out on things like free beer at the bar because the tap at the bar breaks and they have to serve it, otherwise it goes bad. Or someone flips a coin and it lands perfectly on its edge. Or other things that may not be appropriate to discuss in this setting. So by the end, no one wants to leave the group for fear of missing out on something completely awesome. So, have you ever experienced the curse of the Blitz? I've experienced it once, well, definitely more than once, but one particular example comes to mind, and it's not so much that I missed out on something because I left early, but because I arrived late. See, I'm a huge baseball fan, an Angels fan, and every year my wife and I will brave LA traffic in order to drive all the way down to Anaheim to catch an Angels game or two. And on this particular occasion, traffic was especially bad, so we arrived at the Big A just after the first pitch had been thrown, and we could hear the sounds of the game as we hustled up those zigzagging ramps that took us up to our seats in the upper deck. My favorite spot is upper deck behind home plate. Great view of the whole game. And we finally arrived at our seats and, catching our breaths, saw that it was the middle of the first inning. The visiting team was warming up in the field and the Angels were ready to bat. And the scoreboard out in left field showed that the Angels' opponents had scored a run during the half of the inning that we had missed, walking to our seats. And it turns out that was the only run scored in the entire game. The final score was 1-0, and we had missed the one. So we sat through 8.5 more innings of baseball, and not another run had been scored. We had been blitzed. Well, sort of. If you think about it for a moment, the central figure of our gospel reading also experienced the curse of the Blitz, so to speak. Doubting Thomas missed out on probably one of the most important events in all of human history. Jesus had risen from the dead and appeared to his disciples in a locked room, and Thomas missed it. And because he was not so quick to take the other disciples' word for it, and he demands to see the hard evidence, he'll be forever known as Doubting Thomas. But honestly, I think the guy gets a bad rap. I mean, after all, Jesus rises from the dead and appears to all of the other disciples when Thomas is not in the room with them. And according to this gospel account, Jesus doesn't show up again for another 8 days, another week. 8 days later. Then Jesus finally appears again and offers Thomas the physical evidence he demanded a week ago. Thomas proclaims, "My Lord and my God." Thomas's faith is restored, and I guess you could say the curse of the Blitz has been lifted. But still, those three little words, 8 days later or a week later, have stuck with me for the past several weeks as I prepared for this message. I think there's something for us in those 8 days, something for us in Thomas's experience in those 8 days. But to get at that something, I think we first need to get to know Thomas a little bit better. I want for us to consider three questions as we explore what those 8 days meant for Thomas and what they might mean for us. The first question is, why might Thomas not have been with the other disciples? Second, why might Thomas have refused to take the disciples' word for it that Jesus had risen from the dead? And third, what might those 8 days have been like for Thomas? Now, notice I use the word might in all those questions. We definitely have no definitive answers from Scripture, but I think there's enough in the text that we can make some reasonable assumptions. So in order to answer that first question about why he wasn't there, we need to dive into Thomas's backstory or his origin story. Thomas's name is only mentioned 8 times throughout all 4 Gospels, and 4 of those times are simply a roll call of the 12 disciples when one of the Gospel writers lists their names. Another mention is in John 21, the story in the next chapter, where Jesus prepares breakfast on the beach and, you know, invites Peter back into fellowship. And Thomas is simply listed as one of the other 6 fishermen in the boat with Peter. And then there's our gospel reading this morning, which we'll return to in a moment. But there's 2 other mentions of Thomas in John's gospel that can help us understand the question of why he wasn't in the room with the other disciples when Jesus appeared to them. The first time Thomas is an actual character in the narrative is in John chapter 11, a story that might be familiar with us, or to us, the resurrection of Lazarus. Remember, Jesus learns that his friend Lazarus is deathly ill, but he waits 4 days before traveling to Bethany, and in that time, Lazarus dies. When Jesus finally says it's time to go, Thomas makes a seemingly bizarre comment saying, "Let us also go to the other disciples, that we might die with him." Kind of an odd response, right? But see, the last time Jesus went and his crew went had gone into that region of Judea, the people there tried to stone Jesus to death for blasphemy. In a battle of words with the religious leaders, Jesus claimed that he and the Father were one and the same. Those religious leaders didn't take too kindly to that statement and wanted to kill Jesus for it. So going back there, even if it was just to visit some good friends, one who was sick and had passed away, it was only inviting trouble. But Thomas is ready for it. He believes Jesus to be the long-awaited Messiah, and if following Jesus means marching to his own death, then Thomas is ready to die. He's all in. Then a few chapters later in John 14 is the next time we see Thomas. Jesus and his disciples are in the upper room. They've shared in the Passover meal, which Jesus has reimagined into what we now know as Holy Communion. Jesus has told them that he's about to be arrested and killed, but is trying to reassure them that he'll be back again soon. Jesus tells his disciples that they will soon be able to follow him into God's kingdom. And this is when Thomas chimes in by asking, "How can we follow you if we don't know the way?" And this tees up the famous line by Jesus when he says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." See, we often jump right to Jesus' words, but we mustn't overlook Thomas's question. In this tumultuous time right before the cross, Thomas, in asking this question, reaffirms his willingness to follow Jesus anywhere, even to death. He just needs to know the way. Now, one thing we need to keep in mind is that these 2 stories take place in a rather short amount of time. It is thought that the raising of Lazarus likely happened only a few weeks before Holy Week. So let's put ourselves in Thomas's shoes for a moment. When Jesus is about ready to enter Judea, where the people there want him dead, Thomas is ready to put his life on the line. A few weeks later, when Jesus says he's going to be arrested and killed, Thomas again is ready to follow. Then after the meal in the upper room, they all go to the Garden of Gethsemane. Judas arrives, accompanied by temple guards, ready to arrest Jesus. And what does Thomas do? What do all of the disciples do? They run away. They abandon their teacher and their friend. Which brings us to today's text and a possible answer as to why Thomas wasn't with them. I imagine that after the disciples scattered, it probably took the full 3 days that Jesus lay in the grave for them to all make their way back to each other. I imagine that reunion was a mix of sorrow and grief, as well as awkwardness and shame. I used to think that Thomas had originally been with the others, but had just stepped out for a moment, perhaps to go get food or run some other errand. I thought that Thomas just had bad timing, as a result, suffer from the curse of the blitz. But given what we've learned this morning about Thomas, I wonder if he simply had not yet rejoined the others. Maybe he was too embarrassed and ashamed to go back to the others. Just a few weeks ago, he was ready to die for Jesus. And in Jesus' moments of need, he chickened out and ran away like the rest of them. Maybe he's confused and disillusioned. Everything Thomas had staked his life on for the past 3 years has come crashing down in a matter of days. he's likely in a full-blown existential crisis. Which leads us to the second question, why did Thomas not believe the others? I imagine all this confusion and disillusionment simply boiled over when Thomas heard that the other disciples had seen the risen Christ and he had missed it. When Thomas says he won't believe until he sees and touches Jesus' scars, I wonder if those words come from a place of desperation. Something like, I'm not going to let myself be disappointed again. I was all in before, and look where it got me. I don't hear doubt or defiance in Thomas' words. I hear self-preservation. And yet, Thomas stayed. He didn't just throw up his arms in resignation and walk out. He could have just said, forget this, and gone back home. But he stayed there with the other disciples for a full week before Jesus visited them again. Which brings us to our final question. I wonder what those 8 days were like for the disciples, but especially for Thomas. I mean, we read those three little syllables, 8 days later, like it's nothing. But I imagine Thomas felt every single one of those 168 hours creep by slowly. I had to Google how many hours were in a week. I wonder how he and the others passed the time. It would appear that they stayed locked up in that room the entire time out of fear for the Jews, as the passage tells us. Sure, this insurrectionist, Jesus, was dead and gone, but in the eyes of the religious authorities, that doesn't mean that the Jesus movement was dead and gone. Sometimes the only thing worse than a living political threat is a dead one. The Jewish and likely the Roman authorities were probably afraid that Jesus' followers would only be more motivated to rebel against the authorities by Jesus' martyrdom. So the disciples were likely afraid that if they were caught, they would be the next ones hanging on the crosses. But I wonder what the disciples' conversations were like during those 8 days. I wonder how many times they brought up the fact that Jesus had risen, especially when Thomas was around. Or maybe they just let it lie. And yet, in the midst of all this, Thomas stayed. And I have a couple thoughts as to why he might have stayed with the other disciples. My first thought is, where would he go? And not just out of fear of the religious or political authorities if he set foot outside, but because it's not all that easy to walk away from something you've committed 3 years of your life to. I'm reminded of the story in John chapter 6, where Jesus makes some really difficult statements about eating his flesh and drinking his blood, and a rather large chunk of his followers leave. They're no longer buying what Jesus is selling. Seeing this mass exodus, Jesus turns to his disciples, his closest followers, and asks if they're going to leave him too. But Peter replies, "Where else would we go?" I imagine Thomas thinking the same thing during those 8 long days. I'm in this too deep to walk away now. But I wonder if there's more to it. I wonder if it was the community in that locked room that kept him there. Perhaps the other disciples provided the hope he needed to stick it out until Jesus showed up again. Perhaps they saw their friend wrestling and struggling to believe, and they are there to support him. So what's in this for us? Where do we find ourselves in this story? First, in a way, I think we are living in those 8 days of waiting and hoping for Jesus to come back. I've heard this referred to as the, quote, already but not yet. Jesus' death and resurrection has redeemed us and the rest of creation, but we're not yet living, in the fullness of God's promised kingdom. Like Thomas, we have heard that Jesus has risen from the dead, but we haven't seen him for ourselves. We have not yet seen Jesus return in his glory. We too are waiting. And perhaps in that, you can relate to Thomas in the story. Maybe this morning you have your own doubts and disillusionments. Maybe you've considered just saying, forget this, and walking away from it all. But maybe there's something deep inside that is preventing you from doing so. Maybe like the disciples in John chapter 6, you're asking yourself, but where else would I go? If that's you, let me say that you are in the right place. Surrounded by friends, family, and loved ones. Surrounded by other Jesus followers who are here to support you. Surrounded by those who will neither leave you nor ask you to leave. Or perhaps you can better relate to the other disciples. Perhaps you, as the psalmist writes, have tasted and seen that the Lord is good. If that is you, keep an eye on your brothers and sisters in the room here with you. provide the love and support that they need. And so, my friends, let us remember the importance of our Christ-centered community, because some days we'll be like the disciples, excited to see the great things that God is doing in our midst. And other days we will be like Thomas, full of doubts and disillusionment. But whichever you are at the moment, and believe me, it can change moment to moment, let us not forget how much we need each other. Amen.